from KQED.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. The Trump administration's decision to cut funds for research involving fetal tissue immediately hit HIV-related research being done at UC San Francisco, as well as in-house research at the National Institutes of Health. Opponents of abortion rights cheered the long-sought-after move, saying scientists should not use, quote, aborted baby parts for medical research. But researchers say the move jeopardizes efforts to find cures for cancer and other life-threatening illnesses. We look at what drove the administration's decision and what could come next. Joining me is Julie Rovner. She's chief Washington correspondent and host of What the Health, the What the Health podcast at Kaiser Health News. Good morning, Julie Rovner.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. We also have David Magnus with us. He's a director at the Center for Biomedical Ethics, a professor of medicine and biomedical ethics, and professor of pediatrics at Stanford. Good morning, David Magnus.
Good morning.
Could I just start with you, David Magnus, and ask you what your immediate reaction to this move when you learned about it? What was it?
My initial reaction was the triumph of misguided politics over ethical reasoning, because this is a debate that's gone on for a long time. But there's a reason why this kind of research was supported not just by Democratic administrations like the Obama administration and the Clinton administration, but also by the Bush administration.
You mean researching involving the use of aborted fetal tissue?
Yes. So using fetal tissue was seen as acceptable partly because of the recognition that there's a separation, especially with the way that the regulations were set up in the 90s, there's a separation between the issue of the procurement of the tissue and the research that's being done. Being in favor of this kind of research in no way implies anything about one's judgment or view necessarily about abortion, because nobody thinks that if you use organs for transplant, that means you endorse the grounds on which somebody lost their life. So if somebody's shot in violence, if there's a drunk driving accident, a drowning, nobody says that they're endorsing that because we use the body, the organs that can be procured from them for either transplantation or use tissues from those bodies for research.
And so nobody would say they're endorsing abortion simply because they're using aborted fetal tissue.
Correct.
For their medical research. And Julie Rovner, as David Magnus alluded to, this was something that had basically been settled on a bipartisan basis in Congress years ago. Give us the history.
That's right. I covered it. Well, the history goes back to well before I started covering it. The history goes back to the late 1970s. But in the late 1980s, in the end of the Reagan administration, the beginning of the first Bush administration, there was a research group that wanted to use fetal tissue, and it reopened the entire debate. And eventually Congress, as you mentioned, on a very strong bipartisan basis, endorsed this research with the research safeguards that were mentioned, that to make sure that women were not having abortions in order to provide fetal tissue, and that women knew that they would be donating the tissue, that there was a separation. And on those bases, most Republicans, actually, in both the House and Senate, supported this. We saw a similar but related debate in the early 2000s about stem cell research. Again, many Republicans, including many anti-abortion Republicans, endorsed federal funding of that research. And it had basically been kind of status quo until fairly recently.
So tell us what happened. What were the things that makes this issue of using fetal tissue in medical research come back now?
Well, what mainly happened was in 2015, we saw an undercover anti-abortion group put out some videos that purported to show people from Planned Parenthood talking about selling fetal tissue, which is illegal, although you were allowed to charge the cost of procuring the tissue. There was an enormous debate. It turned out that the videos had been doctored. It's not clear the extent to which they had been doctored, but there were no charges brought against any of the Planned Parenthoods. And in fact, there were charges brought against the person who did the videos. But that touched off, sort of reignited the debate among anti-abortion groups about stopping fetal tissue research. And the Trump administration has been, I think it's fair to say, even more anti-abortion than any Republican administration going back to Ronald Reagan. It's even more anti-abortion than the Reagan administration. And so this was something that anti-abortion groups had been urging the administration to do. And this week they did it.
So once again, that 2015 Planned Parenthood video scandal is coming back. And as you said, and I'd like to underscore that even after investigations, Republican-led investigations into Planned Parenthood, they did find that it was not true that they were illegally selling fetal tissue. But that said, this decision will have an effect and has had an immediate effect on UCSF. Can you talk about the research that was happening at UCSF, David Magnus, that will immediately be impacted?
Yeah, so the research that was being done at UCSF involved creating mice that have essentially human immune systems as a model for being able to study HIV. So that's going to be lost. There are actually a number of different uses of fetal tissue in research that have the potential to be lost, especially if this is a pathway that continues right now. There's been the loss of the intramural NIH funding program. In addition to this contract canceled, there was another contract in 2018 that was canceled. But the announcement that there's going to be further review, I think, is signaling to most people a belief that all extramural funding will be lost. But this research includes creating essentially better human models of disease in mice. It involves really exploration of understanding how development happens better so that we can understand better what we can do in regenerative medicine. There's a lot of comparative work comparing fetal tissue and fetal cells to embryonic stem cells, both HESC and also induced pluripotent stem cells, to really see what the differences are and to really be able to better understand how development works so that we can understand basic mechanisms. There's a lot of vaccine work that's being done with humanized mouse models. So these are all areas that would be jeopardized.
Yes, reportedly, just bringing it down to the level of disease, cancer, HIV, Parkinson's, dementia, those are the ones that have been mentioned, Julie Robner. So David Magnus was talking about intramural, which I'm assuming is the in-house NIH studies that were being conducted. But how many studies is NIH funding that would be extramural or outside of work being done specifically there at their labs?
It's not that many. I believe the number is somewhere in the 200 range. But it's important to remember that most research that's paid for by NIH is not intramural research. It's not in-house research.
Exactly.
It is this external research, the extramural research that goes to universities and medical centers and scientists around the country. And I think that's the point here. It's like they can't just cut that off, but there is a mention in the statement that the Department of Health and Human Services put out on Wednesday that said that they're going to be looking at new regulations. Remember, this is currently allowed by law. This was something that Congress put into the NIH law in 1993 and it has never been taken out. So it's interesting to see how they're sort of planning on making this illegal given that it is currently specifically authorized.
Well, let me invite our listeners to join the conversation. We're looking at the Trump administration's decision to cut funds on research involving aborted fetal tissue. We're looking at what it means for medical research. We're also talking about the politics and ideology that may have been behind the move. What's your reaction to this consequential decision by the Trump administration? What are your questions for our guests about either the motivation or impact of this move? Call us at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. On Facebook, you can tweet us at KQED Forum or email us at forum@kqed.org. Now, Julie Robner, you mentioned that they're kind of trying to get around what is established by Congress. So is that partly why they're saying that they're going to look at each of these outside projects that NIH is funding on a case-by-case basis, besides UCSF, of course, which they already automatically just decided to end. But, you know, and if that's the case, how will those programs, that funding be evaluated?
Well, the statement mentions ethics advisory boards, which is kind of interesting in and of itself because it was the existence or the non-existence of ethics advisory boards that basically de facto banned most fetal tissue research for close to two decades, from the late 70s to the early 90s when Congress finally made it legal. There was basically a congressional ban on research, on fetal research, that was not intended to benefit that specific fetus or that caused more than a minimal risk. And in order to waive the minimal risk standard, you had to be approved by an ethics advisory board. But the ethics advisory board was so in itself so controversial that no one was ever able to establish one or have them even consider any of these cases. So by default, everything was continued to be banned. So I'm interested to see the statement implies, and that's all we have right now, the statement implies that there would be a separate ethics advisory board for each project, the way there are institutional review boards that already look at the ethics of research that's required by federal law. So it's not entirely clear how that would work or if we would end up in the same position that we did throughout the 1980s when everybody was so busy fighting over this that there never was actually any board established.
David Magnus, as a bioethicist, do you have an ethical problem with the use of fetal tissue from aborted fetuses in medical research?
Not if the proper protections are put in place. And as I said, if you look at the actual
debates, it sounds like
you're
confident that they are in place.
The law is pretty clear about that. NIH policy is very clear about that. So the regulations are put in place to avoid most of the ethical pitfalls that would really result in this research. If you look at the debates from the late 80s through the early 90s about this issue, when you look at the debates, the vast majority of the ethics community said, with these protections in place, given the good that can be done from this research, there's no reason not to proceed. And if you look at the opponents, the ethics opponents of the research at the time, most of their arguments involved things that turned out not to come to pass. So there was some worry that even if you put in protections to prevent a woman from being motivated in any way by the issue of research in her decision to have an abortion, there was a worry that somehow the fact that something good could come out of this, out of the abortions themselves, might motivate people to have abortions or might increase abortion rates. And so there was a lot of concern about whether or not fetal tissue research might increase abortion rates, especially at a time in the early 90s when there was a lot of enthusiasm about the possibility that direct transplantation of fetal tissue into brains of Parkinson's patients and ALS patients might actually make a significant difference. But it turned out most research that was really valuable in this area have really not been sort of that kind of moonshot, and there's no evidence whatsoever that actual decisions to abort or that rates are influenced in the slightest by the existence of this research. So most of the opposition that existed even at the time has, from an ethics point of view, most of that has really collapsed. So it's not really clear what the rational basis for this objection would be any more than, you know, if you were going to be consistent about this, you'd have to also oppose organ procurement from patients when they die in ways that you don't approve of, which is most of the time. You'd have to be opposed to most cadaveric research that takes place in this country. So if you were going to be consistent on this, you would have to really say that there's a whole range of practices that are incredibly common that you would have to give up. But I don't see any consistency here. I don't see any group saying they're opposed to organ procurement from victims of gun violence, for example. They simply oppose this because I think of the association without really much in the way of an ethical justification.
Hmm. Well, David writes, this decision is perfectly consistent with the idiocy and anti-science bent of this administration. Hopefully, we'll all be undone in the next administration. Julie Rovner, one of the arguments that I've been hearing for a ban on fetal tissue research is that you don't need fetal tissue for some of the research that they're doing. And then you hear scientists saying that there is no alternative. There's something special about using human fetal tissue in terms of its effectiveness in these research projects. Who's right?
Well, there have been efforts to find alternatives both to fetal tissue and to embryonic stem cells basically since these debates began or since they began sort of in earnest in the late 1980s. And so far, none have really been deemed acceptable alternatives, although the search does continue. HHS provided $20 million for research, whether they call it to develop, demonstrate, and validate experimental models that do not rely on human fetal tissue from elective abortions. There has been suggestions. One of the reasons they call it elective abortions is because miscarriages are medically spontaneous abortions. There was some thought that there might be a tissue bank at some point to collect tissue from spontaneous abortions. Researchers have said that's problematic because miscarriages usually mean that there was something wrong with the fetus. It's very hard to reliably use that in research. So there are definitely efforts still ongoing to try and find alternatives. But for the moment, scientists still say that they have not found alternatives that work as well as fetal tissue.
David Magnus.
Yeah, can I also say it'll be very hard to actually find and identify alternatives without the use of fetal tissue itself, because one of the things you have to do when you're doing that kind of research is to be able to do detailed comparisons between what happens with fetal tissue versus embryonic stem cell versus iPSC. So most of the people who are actually working on understanding how induced pluripotent stem cells work, which would be, you know, an alternative from adult sources, most of that research to really show how it can do all those things requires the use of fetal tissue and or embryonic stem cells to really understand how those things differ and how they're the same.
And again, David Magnus is director at the Center for Biomedical Ethics and a professor of medicine and biomedical ethics and a professor of pediatrics at Stanford University. And Julie Rovner is with us, chief Washington correspondent and host of the What the Health podcast at Kaiser Health News. And you, our listeners, again, the number 866-733-6786. If you want to join the conversation, 866-733-6786, or post your comments on Facebook, on Twitter at KQED Forum. Email us at forum@kqed.org. Or post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. And this listener asks, what kinds of discoveries have come out of fetal tissue research? I mean, Julie Rovner, we've heard a lot about polio, chickenpox. What else?
Those are two of the big ones, measles vaccines. A lot of vaccines have come out of this. There's obviously, you know, we talked about the HIV researcher that the research that's been ongoing at UCSF. You know, I think it's important when the debates were happening sort of intensely in Congress about these, first about fetal tissue research, then about embryonic stem cell research, there were promises from scientists that these breakthroughs were just around the corner, and science doesn't work that way. It has been slower, but if you talk to scientists who do this kind of research, they say that important strides have been made. We just haven't found the cure for diabetes or the cure for Alzheimer's or the cure for Parkinson's, but that doesn't mean that there aren't advances coming out of this research.
Well, Kurt writes, scientists can continue their research using fetal tissue, but they must find other funding sources. Medical research is not a core function of government. So how big a hit will this be, David Magnus? I mean, basically, will this create a groundswell of support for research that involves fetal tissue outside of the government, from sources outside of the federal government?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm skeptical that it will, although as it turned out, when the Bush administration banned funding for most embryonic stem cell research, that did give rise to such a groundswell of support, even bipartisan support, that it did give rise to the creation of things like the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, a $3 billion initiative here in California. There were similar efforts in New York and in Wisconsin and many other states. So one of the great ironies was that the federal ban on federal funding of embryonic stem cell research probably actually gave rise to more funding, at least for about 10 years, than would have come through the National Institutes of Health because of the state sort of stepping up. So a question is, with this highly politicized opposition to this research, will there be a similar response by the states to step up and say, since this research is important, the states will fund it and that will be available? But I just don't know if there's really going to be the will for that in the same way that there was for embryonic stem cell research. There was so much enthusiasm for that, maybe over-enthusiasm and not a recognition about how science really works, and I think it would be harder to generate that enthusiasm for the uses of fetal tissue in research.
Well, this listener has a related question. How can you do research in such an unpredictable environment? What's the effect on how research is conducted and what gets researched, Julie Rovner, especially considering that it feels like a lot of political calculations are being made?
Yes, then this is the problem with uncertainty in general. We've seen this with NIH funding overall. When NIH funding was doubled over the late 1990s and early 2000s, and then it sort of leveled off, and there was a problem with researchers not knowing how much money they were going to get and when, and obviously science takes a long time, and you need stable funding, and this just puts more uncertainty into this. One of the concerns is that because it's uncertain, people will say, even if there might be other funding mechanisms, why should they go into this line of research when they might be able to do something where it's more likely that they will be able to get continued funding? And then you deter certain types of research based on their concern that their funding might be cut off.
Speaking of politics, Julie Rovner, it's been reported that Vice President Pence played a very big role in developing this policy with Department of Health and Human Services officials. White House spokespeople said it was President Trump's deeply held convictions that led to this. What are the calculations and ideology that you see driving this?
Well, Vice President Pence, of course, has been a very longtime crusader against abortion and things related to abortion. First, when he was a member of the U.S. House, then as governor of Indiana, and now as vice president. President Trump got a lot of support from some dubious anti-abortion groups because they knew that earlier in his career he had been very pro-abortion rights. I think we see this a little bit. This is what happened to the first President Bush, too, who had also switched positions, and therefore, in order to assure his anti-abortion backers that he was true, he sort of went further than some others might have in that situation. President Trump has been very active in trying to sort of ferret out what is seen as a sort of pro-abortion rights leaning bureaucracy in the Department of Health and Human Services, and they've installed a number of very stalwart anti-abortion officials who are basically going after some of these things that I would say that they never went after in the 8 years of the George W. Bush administration. A lot of things that administration could have done, they didn't do, but President Trump's administration is doing now.
So now a lot of opponents of abortion rights are feeling emboldened. And I think the bigger question that I'm wondering at this point is, how far does this anti-abortion rights movement go? We're seeing it reach into fetal tissue research, David Magnus. What other frontiers are we not considering here, potentially?
Well, the obvious one, and in some ways surprising, is embryonic stem cell research itself. And the current administration has actually not overturned the policies of the Obama administration in this one area. So I think a lot of us have been surprised that there was not a return or a shrinking of support in that area. But again, we'll have to just wait and see if that's next. So that would be certainly a target potentially and an area of concern. Obviously, the loss of reproductive rights is a big concern, and whether that changes and what that's going to mean for health of our patients and for women who are seeking safe and legal abortions. So I think that's obviously from a bioethics point of view, that's going to be a really big one. Obviously, the potential for the loss of access to a needed health service for individuals, especially given draconian laws that are on the books that may really not allow the health and well-being of the women to be taken into account.
And Jeanette in San Jose, join us. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. This is a fascinating discussion, and I'm really enjoying it. And I have a question that is just presenting another aspect. I've read a study by the Guttmacher Institute that abortion rates have been declining in the U.S., and for the first time since 1975, they fell below 1 million. In 2014, they were 926,000 or something, reading from my Post-it note. But does this have any bearing on this discussion vis-a-vis research? I mean, the availability of fetal tissue through elective abortions as opposed to miscarriages and spontaneous abortions.
Jeanette, thanks. David Magnus?
I don't think it's going to have a big impact on the ability to carry out the research because the number of aborted fetuses that are actually used in research is vastly smaller than the total number. It's a very small percentage of the total number of abortions. So it's actually fairly rare. So the difference between the numbers don't really matter for the very small amount that's being procured.
Laura tweets, this fetal tissue move is a blatant political pander by the GOP to shore up its evangelical base. I know I'm a recovering evangelical. Julie Rovner, same question that I asked earlier of David Magnus to you. What is the end game for opponents of abortion rights if we see sort of the tentacles reaching in so many different areas? Do you
well,
have
the
any
end game,
sense
and
of that?
I do, and I think what's even more sort of potentially concerning to researchers and others is that the idea that of personhood, of fetal personhood, or really embryonic personhood, or even pre-embryonic, that that when the moment when an egg and sperm unite, that that would be a person with full legal rights, and the implications that that could have for all kinds of things in society. It would ban in vitro fertilization because you couldn't do anything with those fertilized eggs, those embryos. I mean, that would be considered murder. Would you be able to write off dependents on your taxes for pregnant women? Would fathers be required to provide child support for not yet born infants? I mean, the implications of legal personhood are enormous, and I think that we're already seeing some states that are talking about this that have even endorsed it. It's part of the new Georgia abortion law. Alabama passed it's not part of the law that Alabama just passed, but Alabama passed a referendum last November about this, that there have been efforts that is the end game, that at the moment of fertilization, that is a unique human being with full legal rights.
But generally, our population overall, a majority seem to support Roe v. Wade, or at least the basic tenets of Roe v. Wade, Julie Robner?
Yes. Yes. And that, you know, it's funny, opinion on abortion has been remarkably stable. The public is fairly overwhelmingly in support of general abortion rights, although they are also fairly overwhelmingly in support of some restrictions on those rights. So the polls of this debate are actually not with the majority of the American public. And I think that's why the fight continues. They're forever trying to lure over those who are in the middle, and that's the majority of citizens.
And finally, David Magnus, and we just have a minute left. This listener writes, does California currently fund fetal tissue research?
Yes. So CIRM funding has gone to support some fetal tissue research along with other embryonic stem cell research and induced pluripotent stem cell research. However, the funding for CIRM is dwindling out and will end soon. At that point, there will be not nearly as much research here in the state of California unless there's a new referendum.
So yes, very quickly, the short-term and long-term impact of this move by the Trump administration. What will we see immediately and what will we see longer term?
Immediately, there's a loss of some research, both intramurally and as a result of this contract. Longer term, I think it's likely that the impact of this is going to be to eliminate most extramural funding by researchers around the country in this area. So it's going to definitely slow down a lot of valuable research into vaccine development and development of better models.
David Magnus, he's director at the Center for Biomedical Ethics and professor of medicine and biomedical ethics at Stanford University. And Julie Robner, chief Washington correspondent and host of the What the Health podcast at Kaiser Health News. Thanks to both of you for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
And thanks to our listeners for their questions and comments. You've been listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Have a great weekend.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.